Welcome to Soccer 101, the podcast where we scratch the soccer itches you never knew you had. Today's episode is inspired by a listener question from Steve Hidalgo, who wrote to the Total Soccer Show and asked, why do little kids walk out with players before games? What we want to know in this podcast is, who are these little kids? What business do they have escorting professional soccer players onto the field? My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me to find out more about these youngsters and their role in the beautiful game, we have Mr. Taylor Rockwell. Hello, sir.
Hello, my friend. How are you doing?
I am very well indeed, Tay-Tay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about one of those things that we see all the time and I never give a second thought to until someone asks about it. And then I realize I don't have an answer for it. Mascots in football. Here we go.
There we go. And to be clear, we're talking about mascots here. I haven't actually used the word mascot in this podcast yet, although it's in the episode title. But we should be clear from this top, Tater, yes, that this is mascots as in small children leading the team out onto the field and not grown men in silly cartoon character costumes.
Yeah, no Gunnosaurus chat, no Fred the Red chat today. We're talking about the little kids that come out pre-match, holding hands, occasionally like making faces at Joe Hart, and almost always demanding shirts or autographs from Lionel Messi.
Indeed, and staring at him in awe, as you would. Taylor, before we get started, obvious question for you is, have you ever been a mascot at a soccer game?
I never have. I don't think I've ever even walked onto the pitch while a game was happening or about to happen. So no pitch invasions for me, no mascots either. Yourself?
Oh, juvenile pitch invasions. That's what we should call them. Mascots is too broad, isn't it? I like that. I've never been a mascot, Taylor, but my brother has a good story about how he nearly was a mascot. So we are Wimbledon fans, and back in the day, we'll find out later on as we go through this episode, but mascotting has been done for quite a while, and the year, Taylor, is 1988. My brother is 9 years old. He's sitting in the stands with my dad, getting ready to watch Wimbledon. The manager, Wimbledon's manager, actually came out from the tunnel and came up to my brother and said, would you like to be the mascot today? And you know what my nine-year-old brother said at the time?
Nah.
No, too scared.
Really? All right. Yeah. I mean, well, that makes sense. I wish it was like he was holding out for a better opponent or something like that. But yeah, the nerves can overtake, I guess.
That's a tricky situation when a grown man says, would you like to come and walk out in front of thousands of people who are shouting? If you had a few days of preparation for that, I can imagine my nine-year-old not wanting to do that ad hoc. But so it's certainly been going on a while, certainly since 19...
So did he not do it? So your story about your brother doing it was that he didn't do it?
Yeah. Fun story, right?
Oh, my goodness.
And this is 1988. The manager who came to ask him was Bobby Gould, a legendary manager. This is the Wimbledon team that beat Liverpool in the FA Cup final, who had Vinnie Jones, who had Dennis Wise, who had all these fantastic players.
Exactly.
Wimbledon, and he decided not to do it. He says it's one of his big life regrets.
I'm just picturing, though, like, as he was deliberating, he looked over to players warming up, and Vinnie Jones was just, like, snarling at no one in particular, and he just thought, like, I don't need any of that in my life. I don't need to get too close to that for fear of what could happen.
Yes, Vinnie Jones drawing a finger across his throat as he stares out.
You got to intimidate everybody on the pitch, including the mascots.
All right, Taylor, so let's start off. Tell me exactly what a mascot is. We've kind of covered it already, but I want to know a little bit about them and the history that they have in the game.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because even in the preparation for the show, we had to do a little bit of like deeper digging to figure out because mascots, in terms of this conversation, are the children that go out with the players prior to the game. They stand in front of them during anthems and the like. But as you said, it has existed further back than the kind of modern version of it that we get in the Champions League or in World Cups. It seems to be international competitions that you get the 11 kids per team, so 22 kids total, standing in front, often with hilarious results if they're a little bit too tall. But as your brother's story tells us, it goes back to at least the 80s in England. And I think you can see sort of the reasons for why it still exists today existing then, when you had fan violence and hooligan culture, and maybe it wasn't the most family-friendly thing. So you bring kids in, I think, to remind supporters that, hey, this is a game that kids love and are watching too. So maybe you get fewer people throwing things at players, let's say. I also have heard theories that you would have one kid in like in the tunnel and now multiple kids in the tunnel because it just keeps players on better behavior. They're less likely to get into it. That didn't stop Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane in researching this one. I looked at that one and there is indeed a sort of like middle school aged kid sort of standing there with an amused, bemused expression on his face as Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane get into it. So maybe they didn't quite stop them, but it could have come to like full-on punches if there weren't a child there. So I'm going to say that one worked marginally well.
So hang on a second. I haven't seen that footage. When Roy Keane's like shouting, "I'll see you out there," it's like the kid over in his sideline going, do you mean me?
He really is. It's good work by the kid, because he is up against the wall, sort of waiting to lead out Arsenal, and he's grinning like, "I can't believe this is happening right in front of me," but also knows there are two like wild animals in front of me. I'm going to stay away from this one. So he's doing a good job of staying posted up against the wall, making himself sort of a part of the wall, but also enjoying observing the goings on.
I think that's actually a key reason of why mascots are a thing, Taylor, because bear in mind, in most stadia, certainly European stadia, you have both teams lining up beside one another. Tempers could fray. People could be pretty pumped in that situation. There could be some Roy Keane Vieira stuff going on. And having the presence of some young kids for whom you're supposed to set an example, for whom, you know, supposed to lead out with the captain, I think that can help to quell the potential issues that could come out in the tunnel as well. And I think primarily it's a way of involving the local community in a game. It's certainly that's the origins of this thing. And we can talk about how it's become a commercial enterprise as well a bit later on.
Of course it has.
Yes, because soccer.
Yep.
As you mentioned there as well, I think it's an important, it was important certainly in the 80s and 90s when soccer certainly in Europe wasn't as sanitized as it is today. And to have the kids there might have brought some people in line a little bit and might have reminded everybody, as you say, that it should be a game to be enjoyed for everybody. And one other benefit, I suppose, Taylor, certainly for a team as small as Wimbledon and for many small English sides who started off this mascot thing, it's a way of ingraining a fan for life. If you're you're 9 or 10 and you do that, you're going to be a fan for life. Your kids are, and so on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you are a club, let's say, newly promoted to the Premier League, and now you get to be a 10-year-old brought up. Maybe you're in the academy. That seems to be an ongoing thing. Or a more recent development is that, at least in the Premier League, some clubs make it free to be a mascot, but you have to be in the academy. So right there, like, you're walking out with one of the club legends, with the captain, whomever it may be. And I think there is going to be that strengthening of that connection. You're going to be bonded there. And as you said, so too will your family and likely friends, except for the jealous ones who will like the other team because they wanted that opportunity and didn't get it.
Yes, indeed. All right, Taylor, I think we should take a very quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about how you get to be a mascot, that commercial aspect that's crept in a little more. Some funny examples, some heartwarming examples. Hey, it's just the kids walking out of a tunnel. Let's talk about it more after this break. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Soccer 101, welcome back. Taylor, we've been talking about mascots and how one gets to be one. We've learned that in the 80s, a soccer coach can pluck children out of the stands to do this minutes before a game is about to start. It's a little more formalized these days. And as you mentioned before the break, there are many clubs where you can do it for free, where you can be selected to be a mascot for free. And you don't necessarily have to be in the academy. You can be a fan. There can be various routes to do it. Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea and Man United, according to my research, are all free. However, not all Premier League and indeed European and other teams give the privilege of this experience for free. According to my research, Taylor, in 2019, Swansea became the first Premier League club to charge to have mascots. If you want to be a mascot at West Ham, apparently it was, or it might still be, £700. It's a little more than that, and around £720 at Everton. And basically what they do is they wrap it up into a hospitality package. So your family gets to go in a box, you get a couple of kits, you get a signed shirt, and I think that's how they justify this slightly cynical commercial thing, which should be in the spirit of community and doing the right thing, but hey, it's not.
I mean, hopefully you get that box of the VIP tickets. Some of them are just tickets and no kit. Some of them are just multiple kits and no ticket. So it definitely varies. And I do appreciate those clubs. I was surprised to see Manchester United be one of the clubs that allows players or kids to do it free. I think for most of those, you have to be a junior member. Or there are certain provisions in place. But nice to see that there are still at least a few who let it be free, including some clubs like, say, Brentford, who probably could use that cash influx. So credit to them for not jacking up the prices now that they're in the Premier League, but keeping
it free. To be fair,
Taylor,
their stadium's literally called the Community Stadium. It'd be pretty shocking if they didn't.
I mean, that would kind of go against some things, but we've known Premier League clubs to be hypocrites at times, so it's nice to hear when certain ones are not. But it does seem like, if you want to pay that £720 to have your child walk out for an Everton game, I hope it's worth it. And it's especially sort of disheartening in that way when you look at when it first became more ubiquitous, having the kids, like the full 22 kids come out for the pregame festivities. To my research, that starts around the 2002 World Cup. That's when it becomes a standard practice in World Cups and in the Champions League, at least. And that, at the time, I think, was meant to raise awareness about like children's rights and child advocacy. And so you have kids wearing specialized jerseys. It's meant to promote messages, positive messages at that. And then slowly, that also gets sort of changed into a more corporate structure. Whereas in 2014, I think McDonald's has competitions to allow people to submit entries to be selected, and then they're wearing McDonald's jerseys in front of all of the players. So it's moved a little bit from an awareness campaign. You'll still get some of that, or some of it influenced by those corporate donors, but overall, it's a bit more commercially invested at this point.
Yeah, 1,400 kids, it says, who were sent to Brazil for 2014, Taylor, to promote the cause of burgers.
I'm sure it was like one of those really frustrating, like healthy eating and healthy lifestyle campaigns sponsored by McDonald's. as fake Donovan McNabb says in Always Sunny, real champions eat at McDonald's.
Wonderful stuff. Wonderful reference. So why don't we talk about some good moments from mascot history? I mean, the most cliche is, and you see this a lot when there's 11 kids on the field, is the cold, shivering mascot who's a bit nervous. And it's a chilly February night, being given a training jacket by a player. Little ruffle on the head. I think we've seen that
always
hundreds of times, Taylor.
The ruffle on the head really makes it happen, especially when the child is now adorably ensconced in this giant jacket, and then every single player walks by and rubs him on the head. That has to be a pretty happy moment for the rest of their lives. I don't know if that would work for me, Ryan. If me as an adult like walked up to Thiago Silva and started shivering, I don't know if he's going to give me his coat. Though he does strike me as a gentleman, so you
if
never you, know.
If you hold up a sign saying, Thiago, can I have your coat? Then maybe.
Yeah, possibly. Did you see the video of the kid who, I think for an Everton game, runs on the pitch and gets the jersey and then is escorted off? So I guess you can be a pitch invader if you are under 10 years old, and then it's less pitch invading, more, I don't know, adorable moments.
Yeah, indeed.
I was a big fan. Did you see the Marseille one where the mascot? So that's one, I think, where they have only the one kid mascot and he comes out to help with kickoff. But again, I think meant to be a promoting awareness and promoting like good like social causes. And that mascot is supposed to do the ceremonial first kick, and instead he dribbles it the half, scores a goal, takes the shirt off, does the knee slide celebration, runs up to the camera, and gets right into it to celebrate. So I like that he seized his opportunity. Anytime a young mascot takes that chance, I like it.
I think one of the most famous in the Premier League, there was there's a very well-watched YouTube video from Chelsea-Liverpool back in the day with John Terry and Steven Gerrard lining up in the tunnel. And the mascot is a Chelsea mascot, and he's a little more cavalier than my brother would have been by refusing to walk out onto the field. He's up for it, this kid. He basically, he's chatting with John Terry, and then he goes, "Oi, Gerrard," puts out his hand to shake his hand. And then just as Gerrard reaches out his hand, pulls it away and does the, you know, the gesture with his thumb to his nose, which Gerrard handles very well, actually. He doesn't smile. He just sort of looks away and goes, "Oh, for goodness sake."
I appreciate when they like, and there, every now and then you can see faces of annoyance. I think there's one when like a player moves because or kid moves because he wants to be near Zlatan, but Zlatan, I guess, has like a tradition of walking out with one of the kids. So he makes them like adjust their order so he gets the kid he wants. Maybe that was a fan request. I don't know. But I do like when there is some gamesmanship from the mascots. There's the one I referenced in the beginning of a kid doing the handshakes. He's there to shake every player's hand. And when it gets to Joe Hart, he does the like the thumb on the nose and waggles the finger at him. You got to get a few of those in there just to kind of play the head games early. But my favorite, Ryan, my favorite like tradition that keeps happening is the kid who's maybe hit a growth spurt or is just a little bit too tall compared to the other kids. And the most notable one of those would be when Lorenzo Insigne comes out with the tallest possible mascot, who absolutely would have been maybe not taller than him, but almost as tall enough that you would not have been able to see Insigne's face. And so while all the other kids are in front of the Napoli players, this mascot is standing next to Insigne. Insigne has his arm around him. But that happens every now and then. Even in that same game, as the camera's panning over, Lionel Messi's mascot is not much shorter than him either, though Messi lets him stand in front. Dan James had one of those when he was playing for Manchester United. So that's always a great moment when the mascot is taller or almost as tall as the player.
Yeah, you want Ronaldo to be on his tiptoes with a real shameful reason, and that's one of them.
Yes, of course,
good
stuff.
two of my favorite mascot instances, Taylor, don't involve children at all. One I found was there was a Sao Paulo game in Brazil where instead of children, they walked out with dogs. They were raising awareness of the plight of stray dogs in the city, of which there are many. So that was a wonderful example. And also, one of my favorites, which I think I remember writing about back in the day.
That's risky, Ryan. That is a risky one. My dogs, if I let them outside on like freshly mowed or like leaf removed grass, are going to have a time with it, is how I'll put it. So having a bunch of dogs on the pitch really could have gone one way, and then you would have had to do some field maintenance, put it that way.
Yeah, 22 dogs. The chances are someone's going to go the way that the Italian 90 field did with Gary Lineker on it famously. you're quite right. You're quite right. Another great example from England, Taylor. In September 2018, there was a Man City Fulham game in which Man City's two mascots were 102 and 98 years old. Vera and Olga, which is brilliant old people names. I love that a lot. They've both been going to City for 85 years. Vera apparently had raised over £23,000 for local hospitals through baking. That is a heck of a lot of baking. Well done, Vera. And they basically just commended two of City's longest serving supporters. And obviously they got a win that day as well because they were playing Fulham at home.
Of course.
So that was a really good one. I don't know if you've seen it, but...
No, I haven't.
It's slow progress, I'd say, coming out.
Yeah. I can see how that would take a second. I'm trying to think, like, did they move faster or slower than Tim Ream?
I think Pep might have been looking at his watch a couple times and on his haunches, a little anxious at that moment. But it was a very lovely moment indeed. So dogs and old people, good examples there.
Yeah. But that's what it's supposed to be, right? Like, and that is, like, even if it gets corrupted a little bit, even if it becomes a McDonald's-sponsored event, it is still ultimately a way to remind the players of the community that they represent because that's who you're playing for. That's who's attending those games. That's who you have to kind of foster that connection with. And as you talked about, when it's a kid from the community or a kid from the academy, you know that that's going to create that bond. But when you have a bunch of kids on the pitch from your youth team or a youth team or a charity organization or whatever it may be, it number one, it rewards those kids and gives them a special moment. But I think number two, reminds those players what they're playing for and how much it matters to some people and how it's not just an opportunity to get paid and to be on television, but an opportunity to like give kids or supporters, however old they may be, that opportunity and just that moment to feel, I don't know, cherished, honored for their work or for their efforts or just for being involved. And I think that's a really great way to keep people connected and grounded within their local communities.
It is, Taylor, and definitely, and while it's amusing to have geriatrics and dogs on the field, it can very much be used as a force for good, the mascot process as well. And we saw this just a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you remember this, Taylor, at Villa Park. There was a 9-year-old called Riley Reagan who has autism, and he wears ear protectors, obviously very loud environment. And Danny Ings was accompanying Riley out on the field, who also wore ear protection to raise awareness of autism, a move which was very widely praised and was very good to see, I thought.
Yeah, because it's that very simple gesture that I think speaks volumes to a lot of people, to people who feel like children with autism are otherized or people who have autism themselves can be otherized. And so I think to have a player just remind people that it exists, that it's a thing, but that it's a thing that's very much like you can live with and you can adapt your life to. I just think it's another good reminder of what it can be and why it's important.
Yeah. And another very cool one, I'll just give one more example, please. Taylor, from 2018, Everton versus Man City game at Goodison. There was a robot mascot, which was a telepresence robot with a built-in camera, a speaker, and a microphone, which was linked to an iPad, which allowed a 14-year-old boy to virtually attend the match. He had multiple health conditions, which wouldn't allow him to be on the field that day, but was using this this kind of odd white little robot, which was, I think it was Phil Jagielka, like carrying out onto the field. And it was speaking, and he had all the sensory information from that robot to an iPad where he was. And I thought that was a really wonderful use of technology and yet another way of raising awareness of these kind of things and for being inclusive of the community.
I'm going to say a slightly better use of technology than the race car that brings the ball onto the pitch for certain games. I think, yeah, you could use the robot to help other like other people be able to attend games or be there like in virtual person, I guess, versus an RC car driving a ball onto the pitch that's also probably sponsored by Burger King or something.
I won't have little Volkswagen denigrated on this show or any other, Taylor, but yes, I take your point.
Little Volkswagen.
Yeah. Who knows what kind of car is going to be in a World Cup in a few weeks? I hope it's another kind of Volkswagen. Yay.
I'm assuming it will be powered by oil and gas, but you never know. You never know.
Yes, it'll be powered by good intentions, as is that whole tournament, Taylor. I think that pretty much wraps up our episode on mascots. I've got one more thing to say, a suggestion for the group. We're doing a live show in Brooklyn, November 20th. I think we should have a mascot lead us out onto the stage. What do you think?
You mean Joe?
Yeah, I mean Joe.
I mean, I think it depends, I guess, on how all ages we're planning to be. But maybe that would be a good reminder to, you know, not go totally blue and keep it, you know, nice and respectable. We're not going to do that. We're definitely going to have some rowdy times.
Yeah, or if you've got a nice dog or you've got a 102-year-old relative who'd like to be let out, then let us know. We'll make that happen.
Or a robot. Like an amicable robot. We don't need Terminators. I don't want a Terminator on stage. That could go a different way. RoboCop can go a different way depending on his commands. So, but like an amicable, friendly, maybe a baking robot. Let's get that on the stage.
A baking robot. There we go. How have we got to baking robot from the subject of this podcast? I'm not quite sure. But Taylor, I very much enjoyed this conversation. I feel like I've learned a lot about mascots and their oeuvre. I hope we've answered Steve Hidalgo's question. Should we head off now? What do you say?
I want to say that for fans of the Great British Baking Show, Rahul, the winner of I forget what season, spoiler alert for that season, he is a person I would consider a baking machine. He might be like powered by software in how good he is at baking. So credit to Rahul for being that good at baking and maybe being in our live show. You never know. Credit to you, Ryan Bailey, for suggesting this topic because it was one I hadn't thought of but very much enjoyed.
Thank you very much, Taylor. Now, I've never seen the British Baking Show, but I understand they're all in a tent and there's like 20 ovens in there. I've got one oven in my house here and the power goes off every time we switch it on. So I'm amazed how they managed to do that in a tent. That's another conversation for another time.
Yeah, with no central air, they're always very hot and pretending like they're not. But he was famous for just assuming he was like terrible and had done a horrible job and would always be like, it's awful, it's awful, it's awful. And then they would, of course, like, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. So that's what endeared him to my heart.
There we go. That was Soccer 101 mascots and baking special. Yep. Taylor Rockwell, thank you again for joining us here. My name's been Ryan Bailey. Listener, thank you very much for joining us on this one. We'll be back on the feed with another one very shortly. But for now, catch you later.